Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, April 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with Cooperative Extension Agent Sarah Lewis, Eric Schall, and Darren Snyder about April Fowls and Foods Weekend. Glass artist Lois Mano will be here to tell us about her work at the Juno Artists Gallery. Reggie Schapp will be here to give us a Juno Jazz and Classics overview. And Tim Ortiz will tell us about his abstraction class at the Canvas. Those interviews, National Native News Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Métis Nation of Saskatchewan, Canada, has closed its doors. The president of the organization that represents about 100,000 Métis in the province says it comes after political infighting. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
That infighting resulted in the Provincial Métis Council not holding any meetings. There's been no provincial legislative assembly since 2010. The group's financial agreement with the federal government requires two assemblies a year, so in October of last year, Ottawa pulled the funding, an operating grant of more than $400,000 a year. With no money to operate, the Métis Nation closed its doors and laid off staff. Robert Doucette is the president of the organization.
The Constitution as it's structured right now, and the Métis Nation of Saskatchewan Secretariat Inc., the bylaws that give all the power to the area directors, has to be revamped. And the power of the organization has to go back to the grassroots people.
Doucette says the last of the money will go to pay rent on the organization's buildings. Those buildings hold thousands of files from Métis people for a registry and applications for Métis citizenship. He says some programs, such as suicide prevention and cancer, have already been lost. The federal government says the money will be reinstated if a successful assembly is held. Meanwhile, a judge in Saskatoon has ordered the Métis Nation Saskatchewan to hold a legislative assembly by the middle of June. He said the organization could be seriously damaged if a meeting isn't held soon. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Last week, the state of Alaska issued emergency regulations involving the adoption of Native children. Native groups and advocates say this is a complex issue and are working with the state to help ensure that Native children stay with Native families. State officials say the regulations, which are effective immediately, will allow the state a process to comply with the federal Indian Child Welfare Act. Julie Kitka, president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, was among leaders at a press conference discussing the issue.
What I want to describe just briefly of what the statute combined with the emergency regulation does, it basically creates a foundation to move forward. A foundation with the state working with Alaska's tribes can ensure the Indian Child Welfare Act remains a vital and meaningful protection for Native children and the tribes. And it works towards implementing the intent, the whole purpose of that. And this is very awesome to get to the stage where you're having a governor and his top administration paying attention to this.
Native leaders and advocates say filing an adoption petition in the state is challenging and point to a lack of resources, which has especially impacted families in rural Alaska. Low-income Alaskans may not have access to a lawyer. In rural areas, there's limited access to computers, reliable internet, and a lack of native language court forms. Valerie Davidson is commissioner of the state's Department of Health and Social Services.
We recognize that it has become more difficult for Alaska Native family members, for extended tribal members, for the tribes to be able to come forth and adopt children.
She says there's a disproportionate number of Alaska Native and American Indian children in out-of-home placements in the state. The emergency regulations allow the department to recognize a request by a family or tribe by phone, mail, fax, email, or in person. State officials, Native leaders, and advocates say this is one step in addressing the issue. Legislation has also been introduced. The emergency regulations expire in August. The department intends to make them permanent. This week, the Muscogee Nation in Oklahoma is hosting an event to raise awareness about child abuse. The Wipe Out Child Abuse event is being held in observance of National Child Abuse Prevention Month. A silent walk is planned, along with a blue ribbon tying event. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Gathering of Nations to the UNM Pitt April 24th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at ahcnm.org. Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on successful innovations at NativeGiving.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 20th, 2015. Scott and Burton, your hosts. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio by Cooperative Extension agents Sarah Lewis, Darren Snyder, and chicken enthusiast, overall good guy, volunteer Eric Shaw. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Darren and Sarah, welcome, too. Thanks for coming on to the show.
Yep.
A big week for the Cooperative Extension.
Yes. April's always kind of a big month for us.
Yep. Springtime. Everybody's got the bug, mm-hmm. So we get it, too.
And what I heard we have some outdoorsy-style weather coming up this week. Like just in time, maybe.
Just in time to be indoors.
Right?
And so we've got some good indoor activities this week.
So tell us about it. This is the April Fowls weekend, right?
It is. It's the April Fowls and Foods weekend. We're going to actually kick it off before the weekend with our April Foods Film Festival on Wednesday night at 6 at the Gold Town. We're going to be showing two films there. Growing Cities will be the first one at 6, and that's about urban gardening and farming. And then the second one, sometime later, we're not sure exactly what time that'll start, depending on discussion after the first movie, will be The Real Dirt on Farmer John.
Interesting. And I think the first one speaks for itself a little bit, but tell us about that second one.
Darren's seen it.
Yeah, there was a Southeast Commercial Growers Food Conference in Petersburg earlier, back in February of this year, and that was when I got a chance to watch this film, and I am really excited for Juno folks to see it. It's a story of a Midwest farm where they experienced the challenges back in the 80s where the family farms were folding, and this farmer made a go of it. But it wasn't until a community of consumers, folks who are in the Chicago area, which is adjacent to where that farm is, decided to take charge of their own food shed. And so essentially they chose this gentleman, Farmer John, to go ahead and raise their food for them. So they developed that community-supported agriculture type of relationship with him as their producer, and actually have created a model, which I think is a good way for Juno folks to look at how we could take a little bit more charge of our own food system here in Juno.
Absolutely. It seems like a sort of a nice balance between the both. We are a bit urban here in the city and do some of as much of our own stuff as we can, but then maybe contracting is with that, with mm-hmm. folks that are in places a little better for raising stuff. Possibly.
Yep.
Yeah, and not contracting outside of Juno. I'm seeing production
right
in Juno and in other parts of Southeast Alaska. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Speaking of that, tell us a little bit more about what you guys do as the Cooperative Extension.
Well, we are what's called agents, and so it's confusing
dun, dun, dun.
Sometimes. We're very public agents, we are part of your land-grant university system through the University of Alaska Fairbanks, but we're based here in Juneau, and Sarah and I serve throughout Southeast. And we stick to some of our designated program areas to meet our goals. But my programs are primarily around gardening and to support horticulture and growing. Anybody who has questions on that, and I'm well connected at this point within the Southeast community, so I try and serve in that regard. And then also youth programs, so 4-H youth programs and other youth-related programming is part of my work. So I help with school gardens, and we do an amazing camp that if you're interested, you can call our phone number, 523-3280 for any of this information. But we've got that coming up in June. It's another food-related activity, and so that's just some of our programming.
Okay, including April Fowls and Foods Weekend. What can folks expect? It's at DZ this weekend, right?
It's going to be at DZ. Registration 8:30 in the morning, and classes are going to get started at 9. It's $40 for the whole weekend. And we have, I haven't counted up how many actual workshops, but we have around 20.
20 or so,
yeah, we have 20 or more, and that's not necessarily including like the tour to coop and things that might take people away outside. There will be a little bit of outside. So, for example, there's going to be a foraging walk for spring greens and things like that. So it's 2 days, the Saturday and Sunday, and it's going to be fowl related, so chickens, ducks, geese. There's even going to be some talk of goats.
Mm-hmm.
And then the foods part is going to be everything from, like I just mentioned, foraging, canning, pickling and fermenting, making cheese, a whole spread of some being 101 and some classes being a little bit more advanced depending on what the topic is. And you can pick and choose over the course of the day.
Okay. And who do you see as your target demographic for this? Who would benefit the most?
I'd say anybody who's interested in doing it themselves. The DIY phenomenon and the local food phenomenon is alive and strong here in Juneau. Eric, who I'd love to get on the air in a second here, is a great testament to that. So these are folks who want to maybe either raise some chickens in their backyard or raise a garden or just find out better ways of getting food from our environment here. I am very happy to finally be accomplishing this year our goal of having a workshop to help folks to build a coop in their backyard and to actually get some hands-on experience with that. And that's what Eric's been able to pull together here with some other folks you might share about. We're excited about that one.
Very cool. And so, Eric, will you be giving a tour this weekend as part of this workshop, or how are you going to participate?
Well, we have a couple tours planned. We have it split regionally for downtown and Douglas tours, and then in the valley and out the road tours. So people who have chicken coops right now have volunteered to let the tour participants come around and see how they've set it up for their area and get some hands-on ideas that way. And it's always fun to speak with those people. They always have great stories about their experiences raising their chickens or their other birds.
Cool. And how did you get into chicken culture?
So I have been involved in 4-H since I was in fourth grade. So I grew up down in Oregon and was in 4-H from fourth grade till I graduated. And my family was involved, and my mom still actually works for the extension agency down in Oregon. So when I moved up here out of college, and I think the first chicken summit happened 4 or 5 years ago, I wanted to get back into it. I have some kids that are grown up now, so they're big enough that they want to help. So that's what got us going again in Juneau for chickens.
And did I hear you guys talking about actual coop construction?
Yeah. So we've teamed up with Juneau Makerspace, which is a brand new group on Facebook, and they're really getting their feet under them to get some funding and to find some space. And we have put together a hands-on class where we're going to build probably one coop out of reclaimed materials. We've put together a straightforward design that uses pallets and other locally sourced scrap wood, and we're going to build probably a 4x4 foot coop that would be really good for someone who's starting out and wants 3 to 4 chickens. That's a pretty good number for someone with kind of a small backyard or just wants to do it but is a little nervous about a big time commitment and money commitment. So we're going to work together as a group for anyone who's interested and tear apart a bunch of pallets and put them together in kind of a nice little reclaimed wood coop. So
that sounds like fun. What would you say is the most fulfilling part about raising chickens?
Oh, I think going out and finding eggs every day is a lot of fun. And they all have their own personalities. So it's kind of fun to, you know, people treat chickens as varying levels of pets or maybe just as farm animals, but they do have their own personalities. And I think everyone can kind of agree that it's fun to see chickens be chickens and just do their thing outside.
And are there challenges involved? It must take a little bit of time to raise them, right?
Sure, yeah. Juneau being wet and kind of cold. You know, you have to watch out for their health. They can handle cold weather, but as people know, the dampness is always hard on us and chickens. And we do have a fair number of predators between bears and eagles and the little ermine running around. There's lots of things that want to eat the chickens, and dogs are a problem too. So you have to watch out for them and try to have a safe spot.
I'll bet those are great things that people could ask questions about, though, on the coop tour.
Right, exactly. Right? And we're also going to have a panel discussion with local chicken owners, and that's always a lot of fun because we have questions prepared, but we also get great questions from the audience. And so that's one of the highlights of the past chicken summits, have been being able to just sit down and talk, kind of share your experiences, and there's a lot of really good information shared there.
Excellent. Give us the details once more on the film, and then the film series on Wednesday, and then the event on the weekend.
Sure. So the film's on Wednesday. We'll start at 6 p.m. Wednesday the 22nd, which is also Earth Day, which is kind of nice. And that'll be at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, $12 for both movies. Then the April Fowls and Foods weekend will be on the 25th and 26th, starting at 8:30 in the morning on the 25th. We'd like people to pre-register if they can, just so that we have some idea of numbers. You can do that, and you can get more information. You can Google Juno Cooperative Extension and get to our webpage, or you can look for us in Facebook, and we've got the event listed there.
Okay.
And our phone number, 523-3280. You can get information there, too.
All right. I hope you don't mind. I want to put you all on the spot. In 20 years, perfect world, Juno, what's it look like as far as our food supply, and where does it come from, and how do we produce it?
Perfect world, Juno. Might as well happen in 5 years. I don't know.
Nice. Tell me about it, Darren. What's it look like?
Well, I think that some of it starts with just having an acknowledgement and maybe even a policy on our statewide borough level that food is a priority, and that we need to designate that priority in its true importance, which is to make sure that we are designating the land that's necessary to raise our own food. And that's one issue. And that we're able to so that we are, you know, if you want to have an image, you know, I think the image would be that we've got a place to go and harvest our carrots if we want to be the harvester, or buy our local carrots if that's what we want. And those things that we can produce at these levels that are producible here, we should be doing, you know. And that would be one way of looking at it.
Sarah?
I think you also need to add in a lot of the resources that we have in terms of fish and wild forage products and deer and things like that. So one of the things that we're really fortunate in Southeast is we have those to add into our food picture overall. And so keeping all of that in mind, and all the different scales from your home level where you get your own chickens to maybe some sort of community-supported dairies, things like that, regionally, whether they're in Juneau or throughout Southeast. So looking at it as a region and lots of different scales.
How about you, Eric?
I'd like to see small commercial operations that provide a little of something that we all import, you know, small egg production, small meat bird. You know, we used to have a lot of that, and I think that we'd be well served if there was a group that did something that we all need, and we'd still probably bring in most of it, but we'd have that security if there was a small outfit that did a little bit of everything.
All right. Eric Shaw, Sarah Lewis, and Darren Snyder, thank you both, all three, for coming into the studio today. Give us the number once more on the Facebook page, Sarah.
523-3280 and UAF Extension Juneau District. Look that up on Facebook, something like that.
Great. Thanks, you three. Anything else?
I just want to just mention real quick that we do have not only our local resources, but we have a couple folks flying in, a couple heavy hitters flying in for this one as well. A small goat and ruminant herd expert from UAF is coming in, Dr. Lisa Lund. She's going to be sharing about everything you'd ever want to know, and you could ask her questions about raising goats and other animals. She'll be here through that following Monday, too, so give our number a call if you want to connect with her, or just come to the conference as well. And then also our state veterinarian, Dr. Bob Gerlach, is also going to be in town to help with all of our questions around the state vet type of level.
Great. Thanks again, you three.
Thank you.
Thank you.
barbecue chicken. Won't you send it down the line? A chicken, a fricassee chicken, a marinade chicken. Won't you send it down the line? Say everyone's talking about chicken. Chicken is a popular word, but anywhere you go, you're bound to find a chicken ain't nothing but a bird. Oh, some people call it a fowl. Yeah, that's the story I heard. But let them call it this, you can let them call it that. A chicken ain't nothing but a bird. Oh, you can boil it, roast it, broil it, cook it in a pan or a pot. Eat it with tomatoes, rice, or potatoes. A chicken is still what you got, boy. It was a dish for old Caesar, also King Henry III. But Columbus was smart, said you can't fool me. A chicken ain't nothing but a bird.
Benefit at Centennial Hall on Sunday, April 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. Empty Bowls, a fundraiser for the Glory Hole, features delicious all-you-can-eat soups from your favorite local restaurants, fresh-baked cookies, live music, a silent auction, the always-fun dessert auction, and beautiful bowls from local artisans. Tickets are available at both Hearthside Books locations and at the door. This message brought to you by the Glory Hole.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 20th, 2015. It's about 25 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio by glass artist Lois Mano. Welcome, Lois.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. So you're the featured artist at the Juno Artists Gallery this month, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And you're a glass artist, and you brought some work in, and I want to talk about that in a second. Why don't we start, though, by telling us a little bit about the Juno Artist Gallery and how you got involved there.
Well, it's a wonderful organization. It's based on individual artists who get together as an artist cooperative. And so the gallery is unique in that it is run and managed and staffed by the artists who are represented there.
Okay. And how many years have you been a part of it?
I am brand new. I moved to Juneau from Santa Fe, New Mexico last August. And I've only been with the Juneau Artist Gallery since January of this year.
Well, welcome. So you're still not quite a year in Juneau.
Not quite a year.
How's it treating you?
You know, the darkness during the winter was a little bit overwhelming, especially since I'm a desert rat. I grew up in the Southwest. So that's been some adjusting. But I have a daughter who lives here. She's been here for 5 years, and I have been up several times to visit her, so I knew that I loved this area and wanted to have the experience of living up here.
And I've heard some artists argue that that more darkness lends itself to make more making time, more creation time, if you are inside.
It's very true. I found that I've really been able to refocus on my intentions in the studio because I simply would rather be inside than outside hiking or doing the other things that
you
I'd
have
like
to do like all the time in Santa Fe, right?
Yeah, right. Bart, when the sun's out, you have to get outside. And now, you know, the sun's out less, so I'm indoors more.
So you have some beautiful pieces here in front of you. Tell us about them.
Thank you. Well, as you said, I'm a glass artist. And what most people think about when they think of a glass artist is someone who does glass blowing and makes these beautiful vessels or bowls or jars, or someone who works with stained glass, making windows and cutting pieces of glass. What I do is quite different. I actually start with glass that has been ground into tiny particles. It's called frit. It's sold by several companies. Bullseye Glass is in Portland, is where I buy mine. It comes in different grades, and so I combine particles of glass that are ground to about the consistency of sand with even finer particles that are like flour. I blend those with a binder and add water, and I'm basically taking this glass powder and turning it into like a clay. And that allows me to take this colored glass and manipulate it like clay so I can cut it and sculpt it and form it. And I've chosen feathers as my subject matter to explore what this medium can do. And this is actually a method of working with glass powder that I developed myself over the last 3 years when I got first turned on to glass through a workshop in Santa Fe.
And we were talking before the interview that finding this medium has been sort of revolutionary for you as an artist. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been a professional artist, ever since I was in college. I studied drawing and painting in college and have worked as a two-dimensional artist and illustrator for 30 plus years. But I was sort of feeling a little bit jaded. I'd worked in a lot of media and I was just sort of feeling like I was running dry of ideas. And a friend of mine invited me to go to this glass workshop that she was taking. And something about working with this medium and the intensity of the colors and the interesting science and the entire experience of using fire to make a piece of art was just mind-blowing for me. And I would encourage any artist who's feeling a little bit burned out to jump into a new medium and really shake yourself up because it's a fantastic experience.
Excellent. And feathers. How did you guys?
Feathers. You know, I'm not a birder. I don't have a life list. I'm not a member of the Audubon Society, but I do love birds. I've always been attracted to feathers, and I live with a bird, actually. I have a pet cockatiel named Chirpy, and he's sort of my studio mascot. But feathers are just amazing objects of art of themselves. They're so beautiful and they're so aerodynamic and they're just incredible pieces. What I like to tell people is that since it's illegal to possess wild bird feathers, that having one of my feathers is the only way you can own a feather without committing a felony.
Can you choose one of the feathers in front of you and describe them for our radio listening audience?
Sure. Well, here's one, for example. It's a magpie. So it's basically a black and white feather. I like to make my feathers a little bit larger than life size. Some of my pieces are as long as 19 inches. I start with a base of, like I said, like a feather, like a glass clay. I fire that in a kiln, and I'm working at temperatures that are quite a bit lower than, say, a ceramic artist, just for those of you who know what this is about. So I will fire it flat after sculpting it in the shape of a feather. Then I go back in and add subsequent layers of powder to the surface of the piece. And then I take an X-Acto knife and I incise into the loose powder to create the texture of the barbs on the feather and the veins and all of the detail that's actually in a realistic feather. So by the time I've fired this piece three or four times to make the feather colors accurate, I slump the whole piece over a piece of stainless steel mesh to give it the aerodynamic curves that an actual feather has. So by the time I'm done, and these are pieces that I set up to be on the wall. So by the time I'm done, I have a fairly realistic looking but larger than life feather sculpture.
Okay. And so that's black and white, the magpie feather you just described. And then in front of that, you have a very colorful piece.
Yeah,
tell us about that, how you get those colors.
I have really enjoyed actually learning more and more about feathers and the science of feather colors through my own work. And it was interesting, for instance, to learn that the colors in feathers are created in two different ways. Some of them are actually pigment in the structure of the feather cells. And other color is purely a function of how light is reflecting off the structures of the feather itself. So, for instance, reds and oranges and yellows are actually pigments in the feather, whereas the blues and greens and those iridescent colors that sort of shimmer, like when you see a raven flying, those are tricks of the light. So birds are very tricky creatures, and so capturing those kinds of effects has been an interesting challenge, and I've been playing around with iridescent colors and dichroic glass powders and layering colors over one another to try to capture some of that. And so I have a lot of fun sort of coming up with, you know, ways that I can imitate what the birds have managed to do.
Well, it certainly does seem like you found your passion. This is great.
I'm pretty excited about this. Yes, of course, the next thing I want to do is start, you know, trying to work larger and seeing what I can do about, you know, making a feather that's 4 feet long.
Sounds like a good challenge. And so your work will be at the Juno Artists Gallery until about the end of the month and probably beyond, but you're the featured artist this month.
Yeah, and what it means when you're the featured artist is I was available during the first Friday that happened earlier this month, and I did a demo at the gallery, and I get to use some expanded wall space to be able to have more work up. And I also have work that's more traditional fused glass, which is what I started out working in with glass after I took that first workshop. But the feathers that I make are sort of my focus right now, and they range in size, like I said, from 19-inch wall pieces all the way down to jewelry size. I'm actually wearing a pair of hanging earrings that are small feathers. So it's fun to push the envelope and see what I can come up with.
Good, good. Where can people, if they can't make it to the Juno Artists Gallery, where should they go online to find your work?
My work is on my website, which is www.glassbirdstudios.com. Glassbird Studios is what I call my company. I also have my art in a gallery in Taos, New Mexico, and also on the East Coast in Virginia. So I'm around. I don't have an Etsy site set up yet, so if people want to actually buy my work, they can either contact me directly, or I encourage everyone to go to the Juno Artists Gallery and see it in person.
Well, Lois Mano, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been nice talking to you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. I'm glad I got to follow the chicken theme with more bird stuff.
Anything else you want to add?
No, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome.
This is Bird Note. Thanks to a well-meaning but misguided soul, The house sparrow was first introduced into the U.S. from England in the 1850s, and it's now one of the most common birds in North America. The name house sparrow fits it well because from Bangor, Maine to San Diego, British Columbia to the Panama Canal, and even in Hawaii, it's found nearly everywhere people live. A stocky little street fighter of a bird, it's fussy and vocal year-round. Sparrows often seem to be scrapping with each other, but still, they're always in a group, almost never alone. Sometimes a bush they've settled in seems to be alive with their chatter, even though you can't see a single bird. They even like to bathe together. True to their name, they prefer to nest in man-made structures or birdhouses, rather than in trees. And given a chance, they displace many of our native cavity-nesting birds from nest boxes. Emily Dickinson described the sparrow's nest as sweet of twigs and twine. There's a lot of both in a nest, because when sparrows find a cavity they like, they'll fill up every bit of space before laying their eggs. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Juno Jazz and Classics with Bach, Brahms, and Baklava?
Yes, take the Adventurous Catalyst Quartet, their original arrangement of Bach's Goldberg Variations. Add in local favorite, Paul Rosenthal for the Brahms Viola Quintet. And for dessert, Baklava. Sweet music, sweet treats, jazz and classics. Thursday, May 7th at 7 at Holy Trinity. More information and tickets at jazzandclassics.org, The Jack, Hearthside Books, and at the door.
Exciting times with the Juno Jazz and Classics coming up. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton, and it's about 37 minutes after the hour, and the Juno Jazz and Classics production manager, Reggie Schaap, has joined me in the studio. Reggie, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Scott.
Exciting times.
Exciting times. Almost time for Jazz and Classics.
Right, so you've been working hard all year, you and the whole crew, Linda and Paul and everyone.
We've all been working really hard, and it's already ready to come together.
Well, it looks like it. What a lineup.
Fantastic lineup. Linda did a great job again. We have everything that you could want to do in all varieties of music. Opening night is the Jones Family Gospel Singers, and they just finished the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas, and were rated one of the best there was, a not-to-be-missed act. So it's pretty exciting that they're going to open up for us.
And that's May 1st, right?
May 1st, Centennial Hall.
Okay, very exciting. And who else are you excited about?
Well, I want to make sure people know that we have Curtis Salgado coming. He's the original Blues Brothers. John Belushi based the Blues Brothers on him, and he's going to be here Friday, May 8th, doing a dance at A&B Hall, and he's going to be doing the Blues Cruise also on Saturday, May 9th. And if you're interested in that 5 o'clock Blues Cruise, there's just a few tickets left. We still have quite a few left for the 9 o'clock, but if you're interested in that early cruise, you better get on it and get your tickets.
And where should they do that, Reggie?
They can do that at jazzandclassics.org online, at the Jack Box Office, or at Hearthside Books.
I bet the phone's ringing right now.
Nobody's there if it's ringing. Linda's on her way back from Phoenix.
All right, so Curtis Salgado, I mean, a lot of, tell us, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. They've been at it for 22 years. They have played the Super Bowl. They've played on Dancing with the Stars, on Jay Leno, and they're finally making it to the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival.
I like how you have your website set up so you can go to junojazzandclassics.org and you can click on just about any of these names on the schedule, and it takes you to videos of these performers.
Yes, takes you to videos of them playing their music, what they're like, and we have nice artist bios that gives you an idea of what you can expect for each of these performances.
Yeah.
For our classical people, our favorite Strings at the Shrine is back. This year it's going to be the Catalyst Quartet with Evan Drachman. So there's going to be doing some cello quintets instead of violin quintets.
Interesting.
So it'll be kind of interesting, but we didn't want to leave out the violin quintet, so we're doing a viola quintet with Bach, Brahms, and Baklava. And it's going to be the Catalyst Quartet with our local favorite, Paul Rosenthal, doing that.
Excellent. All right. What else are you excited about, Reggie?
Bria Schoenberg. She is amazing. She is the 2014 New Jazz Artist of the Year. We booked her before she even got that award. We're just well, that worked out
How
well.
How old is she?
She's like 25. She's young.
Not fair.
It's not fair. They say she plays the trumpet like Louis Armstrong and stings like Doris Day. It is just amazing thing. She'll be part of Putting on the Ritz, which is one of the best values you have. You get to have two classical sets and a jazz set with wonderful hors d'oeuvres in the middle of it out at UAS Library. So Putting on the Ritz on Sunday, May 10th. Take your mom for Mother's Day.
Good idea.
And then Bria will also be doing a complete Jazz at the Jack concert on Friday, May 15th.
Mm-hmm.
So that will just be a wonderful time at the Jack. Dance floor will be set up, so come on out and dance your night away.
Okay. What else should we know?
WindSync is coming. WindSync is a wind quintet. They have all these different ones, clarinet, saxophone, bassoon. I'm going to forget one or two. A flute. I should have written that part down.
Oboe?
But an oboe, yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And they play from memory. They use no musical sheets, and they play an enormous amount of music over the time that they'll be playing. They'll also be one of our ones at Putting on the Ritz, as well as having their own concert called No Strings Attached.
Okay, if you had to give us top three not to be missed this year. If you could only go to three events, Reggie, which three would you go to?
I would suggest Putting on the Ritz because you're going to get the classical and the jazz. You're going to get almost all of our classical artists and Bria Schoenberg. Then the opening night with the Jones Family Singers. I mean, they are just rocking right now. And then you'd have to close out with Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. You have to close out with Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. Where else do we get a act that played at the Super Bowl coming to Juneau.
Right. Okay. And all this info and the calendar and links to this is all at?
jazzandclassics.org. Of course, you can call me at the office at 463-3378. The Jack and Hearthside Books also have all that information and tickets to sell.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, and what a great way to kick off May.
It's going to be a great May.
Reggie, anything else you'd like to add?
No, thanks for having me, Scott.
You're welcome. And here's Curtis Salgado with Driving in the Driving Rain.
I'm driving in the driving rain. Black as night, I can't see a thing. I'm driving in the driving rain. I'm running this road till I'm in your arms again. You push me away, pull me back again. I'm driving in the driving rain. Can't see the road, I can't see the light. The wind is howling, I'm holding this wheel so tight. The river is rising at every turn. And through it all, woman, my love for you still burns. I'm driving in the driving rain. Black as night, I can't see a thing. I'm driving in the driving rain. Oh, I'm running the road till I'm in your arms again. Yeah.
frame lightning cuts across the sky, and this old Ford begins to slip and slide. The window's broke, my face is wet, I'm running low on high octane. I ain't giving up yet. I'm driving in the driving rain, running the road till I'm in your arms again. Hey, hey, I'm driving,
driving
in the driving rain. Black as night, I can't see a thing.
Support comes from Alaska Canopy, now accepting applications for the 2015 summer season. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 20th, 2015. It's about 13 minutes until the top of the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by artist Tim Ortiz. He's going to be teaching an abstraction class at the Canvas. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah. Hey, Tim, tell us a little bit about yourself and your art.
Yeah, Scott. I'm a painter. I'm an abstract painter. I've been doing it for several years. And so I'm real excited to teach about what abstraction is at the Canvas. It's something I was a little apprehensive to do initially because I think it's something people find a little bit intimidating or strange. But it's not really anything intimidating, so I look forward to sharing that as much as I can.
Can you give us a few bullet points, a quick 101 on abstraction versus, say, realist style painting or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, all abstraction is everything else about painting, apart from making an image of something. So it's been around a long time, but that's still something that's hard for people to grasp because it's not as easy to see it right away or to have that sort of objective, anchor of the image. But any image, any painting, has many elements to it that are, that are important, that have nothing to do with what the image is. You know, the color, the design, the overall effect of the picture. So abstract painting, is just about exploring those elements in themselves and learning to focus on those things. And so in that way, it can be a really good thing for any kind of painter to spend some time with, to challenge themselves with, to sort of hone their skills in those areas, even if they don't intend to continue making abstract paintings.
Hmm. And what drew you to it in the first place?
Well, for me, the appeal of it is that it allows me to focus on the effect of the painting, without having to have a specific idea. Images, for me, have a lot of, they carry a lot of narrative weight. They always tell some kind of a story anytime you have a picture of something. And what I'm really interested in when I make paintings is just sort of what the overall effect of it is, what the design of it is, what sort of feeling it evokes. What sort of impact that it has. So exploring the ways that I can use things like paint and pencils and paper and canvases to create effects, to create an object that has some kind of presence and an effect is what I'm interested in. So I do that by doing away with the image and just focusing on the effect.
Okay, interesting. And speaking of media, you mentioned that the class will be based probably in acrylics, but there will be a wide variety of media for people to choose from?
Yeah, definitely. We're going to be exploring those ideas and using acrylic painting to explore those ideas primarily, but I want to encourage the students to try out different sorts of ways of working, working with paper, working with different kinds of paint, and working with different ways of applying paint or working with surfaces. So I want to leave it open to a lot of different explorations. So we won't be married to acrylic necessarily.
Okay, sounds interesting. And this is going to be a 4-session class, so over 4 weeks. Tell us about the details.
Yeah, it's going to be Thursday evenings from 6:30 to 9, starting this Thursday, the 23rd, and 4 sessions. So 4 weeks.
Okay. And if folks want more information, is it canvasarts.org?
Yes, canvasarts.org.
And is there a cost for the class?
It's $185 for the 4-week session.
Okay. And is this class open to beginners through experts? Who would benefit from this?
Yeah, it's open to anybody. So this is open to, if you're an expert painter and you want to explore, ideas that maybe you don't focus on enough in your work, things like color, things like design and composition or expression. Or if you're just somebody who's interested in abstract painting, wants to develop an appreciation for this form of art making, you may have not ever painted before. It should be accessible to just about anybody.
All right, Tim Ortiz, thank you for coming in. An abstraction class beginning this Wednesday. Thursday, excuse me, at 6:30 at the Canvas. Tim, are we missing anything? Anything you want to add?
Oh, no, I think that's it, Scott. Thanks.
Great. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, in my head. Get up. Get your man a
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today, Monday, April 20th, 2015. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, I'll be your host again, and we'll talk with members of the Roller Girls about Saturday's bout. We'll get a preview of Wednesday's Pillars of America talk with guest Roger Crawford. Lindsay Halvick will be here to discuss upcoming summer orca adaptive recreation activities and events. And Brenda Taylor from the Juno Douglas High School Site Council will be here. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live at 3 on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN and online via ktoo.org. Here are the Revelers, another Juno jazz and classics band. The weather tonight, rain likely in the evening, then scattered rain showers late, lows around 35. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 46. Mostly cloudy on Wednesday, highs around 48. East wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday through Friday night, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 46. Saturday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 47.
Oh, c'est que toi tu veux plus.